Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and it's a pleasure to be back in your ears. I'm joined by Mr. George Culkin and Mr. Chris Woff. George, how the devil are you? Are we feeling a bit lighter today? Are we feeling a bit better about the world?
I'm definitely feeling lighter because I had my hair cut yesterday.
I thought you'd had your ears lowered. Sorry.
No, my hair was so long. It's like, honestly, my entire body does feel like I've lost about a stone. So that's kind of quite nice. Yes, I think life is always better when Newcastle United win, and I think it's just slightly relieved the tension, albeit maybe not on our podcast, because we've just had a very argumentative half an hour together before we started. So let's find out if anger is an energy or not.
Yes, let's. Chris, how are you doing? You all right?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I'm pleased that there's only three games left of the season, because I'll be honest, it's just felt like this... It's just gone on forever. I was chatting to somebody yesterday about a match that happened in January, and genuinely I thought it was about 2 years ago, the match. It does feel like an age ago. And it's nice that you can think of it that way, whereas last week it was maybe sort of you want the end of the season just because otherwise Newcastle are going to be the relegation picture, whereas now it's like suddenly you're looking up. Everyone's talking about Europe now, so yeah, Newcastle are back in the European picture.
I've been ready for it to end since November.
Judging by the conversation we've just had, I think it's time for us to go our separate ways for a couple of months as well. Like, you know, when Fleetwood Mac come off tour and they all fuck off in opposite directions for a year.
End of day. Is this end of day well. For us?
No, it's like family, but family in the sense that you absolutely all detest each other and don't want to spend any time in each other's company. You get together at Christmas and then remember how much you absolutely hate each other.
Oh, no, come on. Nah. Right then, let's have some headlines in 30 seconds or less. Horizons brightened. Newcastle's win may have consequences down the line. Chris?
Yes, Newcastle United won a game of football. That is a headline. 3-1 against Brighton. That makes it sound far more comfortable than it actually was, but you could feel the relief within the stadium on the touchline, how doing a little heart gesture into the stand, which I think was to his wife. But yeah, potentially Newcastle have moved one step closer to the idea of what they want for the start of next season, which is that Eddie Howe would remain there, but they needed victories in order to do that, and they finally have one of them.
Miley's unlucky break leads to early break, George.
Yes, so this is the news that Lewis Miley will miss the last three matches of the season. He's fractured his fibula. Poor lad.
I know.
Had such a rotten time with injury recently. Had that dead leg that lingered on for ages and ages. Saw him miss 15 matches, and it'll be pre-season now before we see him again. Comes at a moment, really, when everybody at the club believes and thinks that he's ready to start matches and almost have the team built around him. So get well soon, Lewis.
Chris, Amber Alert as the lasses face palm into the summer.
Yes, well, the curse of the former player came back to bite Newcastle United and strongly Amber
Anger. Oh, now, that was Freudian,
slightly
Chris.
Freudian.
That was perfect. Anger. I bet she was angry when she scored that goal as well.
Amber Keegan-Stobbs, who I've regularly seen in the Newcastle United press box this season because she's been injured for a large spell of it, is back playing, which is great, but not for Newcastle United because she scored the only goal as Durham won in the derby at Gated International Stadium and Newcastle's season ended in disappointment.
And finally, George, can Newcastle cut in-form Forest down to size?
This is the question, isn't it? Can Newcastle take their uptick in form and certainly in terms of the Brighton game results into a second successive victory? I think that's important. You know, it's not season over, and I think Brighton was just a first step. It's really important that Newcastle follow that up with another win, if possible, certainly with better performances.
Excellent. Right then, chaps, let's crack on. Crisis averted or merely deferred, Newcastle United beat Brighton 3-1 at St James's Park on the 2nd of May. Hooray! It felt like a big win, even if it wasn't a particularly pretty win. And after a few weeks of pressure and navel-gazing, it brought huge relief. So where do things stand for Eddie Howe and his players, and what comes next? We're only a few days on from Brighton and from PIF's Chatham Hall meetings. Fucking hell. Snuck that back in again, didn't you? How would we sum up the mood at the club at the moment, Chris?
Well, it is very much that R word, which I mentioned earlier, not relegation. Relief is, I think, the response that you get from basically everyone. Fans, people in the dressing room, the coaches, people high up at Newcastle, because that is now finally... Newcastle aren't going to go down from the position. I didn't think they were previously anyway, but given the way that Spurs then went to Villa and won, it would have felt that the bottom of the league was very much concertina and Newcastle were in free fall. Whereas now they can start a look up again. I mean, I do still think that talk of European football at this stage is probably fanciful. They're probably going to have to go and win the last three games, and even then they might not get there, but they are now only 6 points above, below some of the teams who are in those sort of European positions. Still unclear how many there are going to be. But just to have got that win, for it not to just be completely doom and gloom, and suddenly, rather than thinking of the future as, well, how can this go on indefinitely in the way that it is, it's now maybe there is that chink of light as to everyone can continue in the way that everyone really preferred, and by everyone I mean Newcastle's higher-ups and Eddie Howe and his coaching staff, that they mutually wanted to be able to continue, but they all realised that wins are required. And it's still, there's still more wins are still required. And Howe said after the game, he said before the match, we need to win matches, and he said now we need to continue that. And everyone is still on those same lines. But yeah, it just feels like a huge weight really has been lifted, and instead of just constant trepidation, maybe now you can go in those final few games with a little bit of hope again.
George, we've spoken a lot about Eddie Howe needing that win, haven't we? Can he now look ahead confidently to the future?
Just to touch briefly on the previous question as well, I mean, I think it's important to state that there was a feeling of positivity around PIF being in the region for those two or three days. I mean, we were constantly being told not to read too much into it. You know, everybody was getting very excited. And when I say everybody, I'm talking about media outlets and, you know, maybe fans as well. But the mood was relaxed. It was positive. There was a feeling that everybody's still in this together. I think at the top of the club, there's been that sense of positivity. So that's important just to note, because there's, you know, there obviously has been the development with Live Golf and other parts of the PIF sporting empire, that there seems to still be this commitment. So that was good. And yeah, I mean, as Chris said, on the playing side, it's, you know, sometimes football is a very simple game, and Newcastle needed to win to at least suggest, or at least to show, that there's a pathway to move forward, that they weren't locked in this doom cycle of defeat and negativity, because that does not give you a platform to move upwards from. So just, you know, really important. Have things materially changed since Brighton? No, I don't think so. I don't think there's been sort of any huge meeting with Eddie Howe being told, you know, you're safe, or, you know, you're not going to get sacked, or you know, here's a new contract. I don't think it's anything like that. I think it's, you know, as we've constantly said on this podcast, the starting point for Newcastle was that Eddie Howe would be the head coach next season. The problem has been that starting point has felt a long way distant, because the form had been so bad, because results had been so bad. Now, I think if you ask people around Eddie Howe how he's feeling he needs to follow this win up with another one, with another good performance, like that this is a starting point. I think if you speak to people at the top of the club, it's like, if Newcastle lose the last three games 5-0, then we're going to be in danger territory again. But like I said, the mood from the meetings was positive. Howe's presented his version of what the club could and should look like moving forward. And having got that win, you can now see that point a bit more clearly.
In some ways, Chris, that team against Brighton was the opposite of the future, wasn't it? Willock, Murphy, Burnett, left back, all of them were really good on the day, but it wasn't exactly a forward-looking team, was it?
Yeah, they were all really good, but it almost felt like, yeah, back to the future again to a certain extent, for one of those cliches, and that Howe went back to something that he trusts. I mean, he spoke about this afterwards, and we're going to come on to it. But Willock, I mean, in all likelihood, is going to leave this summer. He's only going to have 1 year left in his contract. He could have left at certain other points. He hasn't featured regularly across much of this season, but he had been good at Arsenal, as George mentioned, and then he remains in the side. Jacob Murphy hasn't had the stellar season that he had last year, partly because he hasn't had Alexander Isak to get on the end of the crosses he put into the box. But he delivered in that key moment. He did what he does best, which is cross the ball in that crucial moment, kept his head. And Byrne was in sort of for reliability defensively, physicality. Howe wanted continuity from Arsenal, where he felt that Newcastle had been better defensively. But if Newcastle were to start next season and those three were in those positions, then you would be concerned as to where they were in that kit. Because even if that was maybe to work for the first few weeks of next season, you don't see any longevity in that as where Newcastle could and should be moving forward. So it did feel short-term missed in many ways. But that's because for there to be a future with Howe and a one that people can believe in, he does just need those victories. And so it almost felt like he had to just focus on the here and now, get that win, even if that feels like, to a degree, in the very immediate term, at the expense of those players he needs to develop moving forward. But I think he's almost decided in his own mind, despite having liked what he's seen on the training ground over the course of the last few weeks, when he's actually had 20 players training, and that you can see the benefits. So many people you speak to in and around the clubs have spoken about that they'd felt it was coming because they'd had that. But equally, those players really, some of them need a full pre-season to actually fully integrate into what Howe wants, whereas these players have been there since basically the start of Howe's tenure, and they know fundamentally what it is he wants from them.
I went with players that I can really trust, that I know can handle this kind of atmosphere and this kind of pressure. But I'm not picking the team based on emotion, I'm picking the team based on what I think gives us the best chance of winning the game. And those players have never let me down, and they didn't today. I thought they were all outstanding in different ways. The balance of the team, of course, is important because you need different qualities to hurt an opponent. We went with real pace up front, that was the plan. Also having a strong bench. I mean, great to have such great tools to use to be able to bring Lewis Hall on and change system and a moment where we needed it, I thought was really important too.
An interesting statement that, George.
You sometimes sort of have to ask yourself who the audience is when a manager speaks. And a lot of the time it's his own fans, a lot of the time it's his own players. And, you know, sometimes there can be coded messages for hierarchy and things like that. What we should never expect necessarily is for managers to tell the truth, because that's not what it's about. I mean, it's often about kind of propaganda. And I do think that's kind of quite telling, you know, that idea of trust and can handle the atmosphere. We talked a little bit on match day about some of the reaction to that team when it came out. And people have like almost compared it to Ruud Gullit and, you know, dropping Alan Shearer and Duncan Ferguson and playing Paul Robinson. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far, because that was a time when the club was really, there was a proper sort of civil war going on in the dressing room. I don't think that's an exaggeration, and it's certainly not like that. But it was a brave team in the circumstances. You also have to look at the bench and what message that sent in front of the ownership. Pretty startling, really. And I think one of the things that sort of interests me is that now that we've got back into this position where Howe is playing one game a week, he's gone with the tried and trusted and not actually found a way to sort of integrate Walter Marder or Alanga or Jacob Ramsey or whoever, that actually spending time on the training pitch has led him to pick this team, which I find fascinating.
£325 million worth of talent sitting on the bench, Chris.
335, I think it was.
335, wow, okay. I mean, that tells its own story, doesn't it, really?
It does, and it tells one, in one sense, as the way George referred to on Saturday, and I think it's a fair one, in one sense it feels like in the immediate term a bit of failure, that those, if you spend that much money on those players, you would expect them to be in the first 11, particularly when we're talking about some of those players we mentioned before, Willock and Murphy, for example, pre-takeover signings. Now, that's success in that Howe's managed to extract more from them over time, but realistically, you would have thought at this stage that basically the entire team would have shifted, or maybe even the entire squad, to progress. That's just the natural progress that you would get in a squad, hopefully, if you're going to be moving upwards. So in that sense, a bit of failure, but it also then just shows bravery again. I think we've said this many times about Howe and Walter Marder, that and Wissa that he isn't just selecting them because so much money was spent largely on his own say-so last summer, albeit with all the mitigation that was there. He's going for what he thinks is needed in the here and now, in that moment. And so he's not just going to pick players for the price tag that they offer. He's going to pick for the balance of the side, what he needs in that moment, in the here and now. And yeah, unfortunately, the likes of for Langer, it just hasn't happened so far. And Newcastle spent that money on him last summer. And in that key moment, he wasn't a player who I think you could necessarily put in that environment. Maybe the way the crowds reacted, yes, there was a lot of positivity at the start of this year when Howe asked for that love towards Elanga. But in the last couple of home games before this, when he had made a couple of mistakes, that sort of tension returned. And so instead, Howe went for the players who he thought could handle as much of that occasion as possible. And that wasn't necessarily all the players who have the big price tags in there.
I mean, it's also a story of success in another way, if you flip it around, because he picked that team, Newcastle got a win. And if that's the team that he thinks deserves to play, then that sends, you know, that sends a message out to everybody else too. It's like, okay, if you want to play, if you're serious about having a career here at Newcastle, you've got to play better than these fellas. You've got to train better than these fellas. And so that should be, you know, that should be the basis of any team. We shouldn't be kind of looking at the bench and thinking, why isn't that person playing? We should be looking at the team and saying, are they working? Are they gelling? Are they getting a result? Like we talked on match day about that front three. And okay, so, you know, Willock may not be around this time next season. Jacob Murphy may not be around in a couple of years' time. And, you know, Asula could have left last summer. But if they're gelling and if it's working, then that is the basic, that is what a team is. I mean, it's like, it's about getting a tune out of them all together, isn't it?
I thought it was really interesting that he kind of went back to that Willock and Joe Linton sort of hybrid switching role, which brought him so much success at different times in the past. I thought that was interesting that, you know, that sort of little partnership came back in. And he's referenced, hasn't he, Howe, a couple of times now, Chris, the dangers of changing too many players in one window. Do we think that's a bit of a coded reference to what happened last year, or even maybe a bit of a forewarning to what could potentially happen in the summer as well?
Well, in his press conference on Friday, he spoke about the six players Newcastle signed last year and talked about them moving forward. That's not what you want to do. And at least my reading of this from conversations I've had subsequently, and he also spoke more about it after the match on Saturday, is that Howe ideally does not want a lot of change. I mean, he spoke after the game about the need for every single window the club should be signing a player, which obviously they didn't do in January. He would have liked someone in January, but didn't really push too hard for someone because he was told that the circumstances weren't there to sign someone. He also went five windows without strength in the first 11 before last summer. And so his point, I think, more is that we can't get ourselves in this position regularly. Some people then responded to this, some fans, by, I saw a lot of discourse about, oh, he can't possibly be saying we can't sign six players this summer. We need at least six signings. And I don't think he did say that. I think that was slightly misinterpreted. I don't think he was saying, I don't want to sign six players this summer. Because even by the players who are likely to leave at the end of their contracts and the like, you're probably going to have half a dozen players who need replaced there anyway. I think what he's trying to say is that such upheaval doesn't usually lead to a successful season that follows. I mean, Sunderland this year would be a counter to that, but largely some of the data Newcastle have internally is that it shows when a club does so much business in one summer, the likelihood is moving forward, particularly when it's towards the end of a window, you tend to regress on the field, and there is a concern that could happen going this year. If Newcastle gets some of the business done sooner and there's a full pre-season behind it, I think that's slightly different as well. But because a lot of Newcastle's business was late, that exacerbated the significant change that needed to occur. So his argument is largely, and I remember this the first summer he was actually at Newcastle, I remember going into that, and a lot of the talk was, oh, Newcastle are going to sign 8-9 players, are going to change the entire first team. And Howe behind the scenes was pushing back on that. And in the end, Newcastle made sort of, was it four signings maybe they made that summer? But four targeted signings to improve areas of the team, and the rest of the team grew with it. Ideally, I think what he would like in a summer window is probably 2-3 senior signings every summer, gradually improve the first team, make another one or two signings in January and progress moving forward. But that's not the position Newcastle found themselves in last summer. And I think it's almost certainly not the position they're in now. And so there probably is going to be a period of transition again going into next year, which is why I don't necessarily see the trajectory of Newcastle suddenly massively improving. Howe believes he can do that with a pre-season and to improve the players he already signed last year and for them to integrate further. but I still think there's going to be parts of the side where you're going to bring in players. Say if Anthony Gordon leaves, the likelihood is you're going to be signing a younger player with maybe a high ceiling, but can they deliver immediately? Possibly not.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. I mean, Newcastle effectively had no choice but to do what they did last summer, but it wasn't ideal in any of the circumstances because so much of it was desperate. But they'd left themselves in the position, having not strengthened for so long, that they had to do a lot of business. Now, if you go back again, you talk about the first Champions League campaign. They sign Hall and Livramento. That was a very targeted. They knew that they had the biggest drop off in those positions moving forward. And at the time, you're thinking, okay, like, why are Newcastle doing that now? But it meant that they had their succession planning in place. They wanted to do the same thing with James Trafford 2 years ago, and they didn't. Look at the mess they've been left in with the goalkeeping department now. But that's what a mature, sensible, forward-thinking club should be doing. And they've left themselves, they've left themselves with far too much to be done, because they've had this almost like cycle of boom and bust when it comes to signings.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Chris, Will Osula, do we think he's now part of Newcastle's future? He could have been out the door last summer, couldn't he, of course, but maybe he's fourth or fifth choice as well. But now he's starting games and he's scoring goals.
Yeah, he could have gone last summer, and I think Howe and others at Newcastle probably would have accepted that, the money that could have brought in, how it would have helped Newcastle from a sort of PSR, SCR perspective. At that stage, it was good money, 30-ish million for a player who hadn't really shown enough to really justify that, hadn't played enough Premier League minutes really to justify that. And it's only really been over the course of the last month that he has established himself as a regular start. His first Premier League start came at Leeds in August, and then he wasn't seen again from the start of matches. He got an unfortunate injury because he had scored against Liverpool, but had that unfortunate ankle injury which disrupted him for much of the first half of the season. But if you'd asked me this question a month, 6 weeks ago, I'd have said, no, I think the likelihood is that Will Osula, Newcastle, if they can get a decent fee for him, they will be looking to sell him and probably reinvest. But now, I actually think that of the three out-and-out centre-forwards, so Osula, Voldemarda and Wissa, the most likely one to stay at this stage is actually Osula. Now, that's not to say both the others will go, but one of the, or both of the others potentially could go. And I think that Newcastle, do they see Osula as the out-and-out centre-forward choice moving forward? Possibly not. But as a second or third choice, I think they now see a lot more from him. He's starting to develop more. He seems to have really started to deliver more in those key moments, and stylistically he probably is more suited to what Howe wants. So yes, it's a curious situation that it has changed in that way, but Howe seems to have more trust in him than he certainly does the other two right now.
I mean, he's first on one measure at least, 0.76 goals per game. He's the most lethal goal scorer in Newcastle United's Premier League history, statistically speaking, Chris, isn't he? I mean, the thing is with the Sula, I like him. He's a bit of a rough diamond, isn't he? He's still raw and he's still learning the game quite clearly and learning how to be a Premier League centre forward. But he does things differently, I think, to anybody else who plays for Newcastle up front. He gets the ball down. He's prepared to take players on. He a few little turns during that game against Brighton where he left players for dead, and I just think it gets fans off their seat. It's something different, and I think we like to see that, don't we?
I think certainly against the sort of high line that Brighton played in the first half and the sort of lack of pace they had in behind, he was lethal. He was ideal for that. He does things differently. He allowed the ball. There was quite often he sort of did that turn where he just lets the ball roll beyond him, or he did a couple of flicks in behind to send Willock in, but where he basically did his defenders when he was playing in such a way. So I'm fascinated to see how he will cope more often against sort of lower block defences, and that's been Newcastle's issue in general quite often. And does Osula have the tools to really be able to sort that out. Is he more suited to when Newcastle have that space in behind? There is still a lot of development to go there. But he has added those goals to his game. That was what I would have said previously wasn't necessary there. It was like everything was 100 miles an hour and then maybe get in and around the box and the end product wasn't necessarily there, or you weren't confident that consistently be there. He hasn't had loads of chances in terms of actual clear-cut opportunities in the last few games, but he's scoring goals at a far more regular basis. And he was in that position to finish the Murphy test. Yeah, you could say, oh, it was an open goal, but he made sure he was in that position to be there to put it away. Would he definitely have been in that position a year ago? I'm not entirely sure. I think that goal against Man United gave him so much belief. He's a confident lad anyway, but I think it gave him
a bit of
affirmation.
He nearly scored the same goal again, didn't he, against Brighton?
He did, yeah.
Nearly
he did, exactly.
Same goal.
Yeah, it was almost a carbon copy. And so I think that was sort of the turning point for him this season, and how he really likes what he's seen from him in training. The application is there. He's worked hard with Graham Jones, Jason Tindall on various elements of his game. And so, yeah, I think compared to the Willisula we saw in August, this is a very, very different player now. Now, there's still so much progress to go. There is still an element of rawness to him despite him being 21-22, but I think I've always said the component parts are all there. It's about putting them together, and it feels like he started to put quite a few more of them together in a positive way.
You mentioned that Brighton goal, Chris, and I think that's a really important point. I mean, how many times this season have balls come into the box and there's just been nobody there attacking it or waiting? And, you know, like, actually a goal like that is good to see. And, you know, I stop watching when Verbruggen comes flying out and clips Murphy, because I just thought the foul's gonna get blown for. Murphy does brilliantly to get himself straight back up and put the cross in, but Asula does really well to anticipate that happening and to be in the right place and to time his run. And so, like, a goal like that is really, really important. And you know, the other thing I was going to say about Brighton was that there's a fantastic moment when the ball's played up the line. I think it's Murphy actually just trying to kind of clear it, and he does that amazing dummy and drops his shoulder and he's released. He then runs into the box and then slashes the ball wide, and you see sort of two sides of him. You've got someone who's got the talent and the instinct to do that kind of brilliant run and that brilliant dummy, and then he kind of still ended up rushing his shot. You know, keep talking about successes and failures, and in some ways that's wrong in some ways, or it's unfair. Asula's in the team at the minute because he deserves to be starting matches, and I think you can see his development. And yeah, he deserves to be playing for Newcastle at the minute, and I think that is a positive story, because he's shown that he can develop, and you know we're seeing that happen, which is good. Pleased for him.
Chris Lane on Discord dug out another interesting stat for us, and it's a comparison between Willisula and Alexander Isak. Willisula's made 21 appearances this season. Alexander Isak's made 13. Asula's played 589 minutes. Isak's played 690, which I was quite surprised at it being that high, to be honest. Asula has 5 goals. Isak has 3, and they have 0 yellow cards each. It just shows you, Chris, doesn't it? Newcastle have actually, I'm going to say, come out all right with that situation, but I'm not sure if that's the right way to put it. But
That is definitely not the right way to put it. But I think nobody's come out well of it. But if you'd suggested those stats at the start of the season, you know, I think Chris says that on Discord. Chris Lane says that on Discord. Like, you'd have said, you know, that's madness. That's not going to happen.
Stats don't lie, George. Alexander Isak's shit and Willisula is brilliant. The stats don't lie.
Well, yeah, I suppose if you want to look at it in that very way. No, but what it does show is both of them, how little football they've played at certain points. Isak, I think Liverpool tried to play him into form early on. He then had that serious injury. He's only just come back. For Asula, it was a case of he got that start at Leeds, was coming off the bench a little bit, had that recurring ankle problem, then probably was fourth choice for large periods of the season, and now is really starting to come into form. I mean, a lot of those minutes have been accrued, probably half of them, if not more, have been accrued over the course of the last few weeks and in those last few matches when he's actually started games. But all of it is such a small sample size, unfortunately, for both of them, that this is, it's about extrapolating over the course of a long period. And that's it. That's a challenge for Asula, is not just the here and now, but to make sure that he is actually consistent over a longer period of time. Could you say with confidence yet that Willisula is going to deliver that sort of goals return over a longer period of time when he plays a lot, starts a lot more matches, and that he will really be prolific. I don't think he can be anywhere close to saying that yet, but at least now you can enter that conversation with a little more optimism that he could be there, whereas previously, if you'd asked me 6 weeks ago, I'd have just said, I just don't see it.
I want to talk to you, Chris, about the Bruno Guimarães effect as well, and you want to talk about the skipper's enduring influence.
Yes, so it's almost become a sort of... We're a bit laissez-faire about it, I think, generally all of us, and just seeing how important Bruno Guimarães is just because our Newcastle need him. There was the stat which everyone pointed to until Newcastle finally won against Manchester United, that when Bruno Guimarães did not start a Premier League match for Newcastle, basically they didn't win. That had gone all the way back to his full debut in March 2022 after he'd arrived. But they got that monkey off their back, but actually Newcastle's record with and without him is still, it still doesn't really draw comparison in terms of how much more effective they are. Even earlier this season when they weren't at their sort of very best, that the influence he brought. But it's beyond that. It's sort of everything that he brings on the field. Howard's spoken about him being so keen to get on the ball, that he demands it in certain positions, that when... even when times are tough, he doesn't shy away. He takes that responsibility on. And I think it's, you notice when he's not there on the pitch how Newcastle look, it feels like players are looking at one another. The Bournemouth game being a prime example of that, in the first half in particular, it felt like nobody was taking that game by the scruff of the neck. And even since Bruno's come back into the side, he clearly isn't fully fit yet. You can see he isn't yet being able to deliver exactly what Newcastle would want from him and how influential he can be. But just his presence there and his willingness to move the ball on, and obviously the way that he sets up the chance for Newcastle's opening goal, when he puts the vision but also execution he has to send Murphy in, and Verbruggen loses his head, but that position is brought about by Bruno. And I'm going to be writing about this for The Athletic, but if you look at like sort of all the statistics on this, so if you look at the passes that he per 100 that he attempts that are line breaking, he's by far and away the best for Newcastle. So he gets Newcastle up the field, he makes those key passes in an offensive sense. I think Newcastle lose so much without him. Also, skill corner data, which is, it shows...
Skill corner.
They provide the stats. That's why I'm mentioning them, because they okay. So skill corner provide the stats on this.
It's not like field. No, it's not like, not like field. Field
this is an actual.
I was going to start getting a bit.
I'm giving a shout out to the actual company whose data provides this. That's fine. When making passes under high pressure, he ranks highly across, not just for Newcastle players, but across all of midfielders in Europe's top five leagues. For when he receives the ball under pressure and then moves it forward. And then you also have that sort of fouls, when he did this a couple of times in the second half against Brighton, where I think he averages 2.5 fouls per 90, but usually when he makes them as well, they tend to be just on the edge of Newcastle's box or just inside their own half, and he does that clever thing where he draws a foul. They're usually very soft, but it's usually at a time when Newcastle desperately need that bit of relief, and he has that game management that they have lacked so often.
100%. Like, we talk about that sort of game management, shit housing, things like that. I mean, I think Bruno is the best winner of a free kick that Newcastle have had since Shearer. I mean, Shearer was an absolute master of it. And, you know, absolutely not cheating. It's like you feel a touch, you go down, you don't make a meal of it. Bruno does that. He does that brilliantly. It takes pressure off the team. But also that thing you mentioned, Chris, there about sort of constantly wanting the ball. Now, when teams are going through difficult moments, there's almost like a reluctance. You question yourself. I'm not saying that, again, that sort of other players cheat, but it's like you're not confident of what you want.
He never hides, does he?
He never hides. He always wants the ball. He's always asking for the ball. That becomes really important, because then other players see that. So we talk about his leadership and his form of leadership, and it is absolutely in those sorts of things. It's not shouting, it's not telling people where to be, but it is that example, always wanting the ball. And if you see your captain always wanting the ball, that then infiltrates the rest of the team. You know, Chris talked about the goal that he helped create. Also, that set piece, the corners, you know, with him on the ball taking corners, he's whipping the ball into the 6-yard box. That becomes incredibly difficult for other teams to defend. He has a bit of everything. I think you're right, Chris, that it's like we almost take him for granted. And there are times sometimes we've looked at Tonali and thought, okay, well, would we really miss Bruno if he wasn't there? And actually, I think we should be thinking differently about Bruno now, particularly in a season that Tonali struggled in. He is absolutely fundamental. He is the heartbeat of the team. He's the leader of the team. He sets an example. He sets the tone. And he is just really, really good at football. Can't speak too highly of him.
Point I also should have made, and it's a fairly fundamental one, but it's how he talks about it, is that he's also a winner. You heard that after the game on Saturday. He is the one who's talking about we should be trying to get into Europe, because he's not satisfied with where they are. He thinks they should win the final few games, and he has that insatiable drive for more. Newcastle win a trophy, for the major domestic trophy, for the first time in 70 years. Yes, he's celebrating it, but he's then talking about going on and winning more. That is what his attitude is, and that's what they need throughout the team, really.
Joe Linton came back into the team as well and was straight back to running around like a maniac and using his physicality to push Newcastle forward. It's nice to see him doing that again. Chris?
Yeah, I thought we'd seen a few disappointing performances from Joe Linton before his suspension. Then his suspension was picked up in a sort of silly manner. It felt unnecessary at the time to pick up that book and detrimental for Newcastle in those subsequent matches. But he came back in and he was everywhere against Brighton, and it was the sort of game that suited him. Disrupt their rhythm, get in and about. Having Willock alongside him, someone who can do that running with them, helped. There was also that moment later on where he sort of burst forward himself and had the shot across goal.
Harvey Barnes wasn't happy with that, was he?
He was good not happy Lord. With that, no. The back post, he felt he should have had it rolled across to him. But for Howe's side always seems to, or the Howe era, Newcastle always seemed to play better when you have Joe Linton in the side and playing well. And that is... It, alongside Bruno Guimaraes as well. It's a different sort of influence, and I wouldn't say he's exactly the same as Bruno in there. I think Bruno is absolutely central, but I think the physicality and sort of intensity that is brought to Newcastle's game and that bit of niggle, that's what Joe Linton brings at his best.
George Lewis Hall's been a source of some debate, hasn't he, after Dan Byrne was preferred at left back. I mean, he's undoubtedly been one of Newcastle's best and most important players in the last 18 months. So what's going on with him? Do we think Eddie Howe's team selections have been vindicated?
Well, they've definitely been vindicated, because he got a win, and there was there was a kind of better performance against Arsenal. He spoke afterwards about wanting to get Dan Byrne's height and leadership into the team, and Dan Byrne played very well in a similar role against Brighton. It is interesting. Yeah, it's definitely interesting, because against Bournemouth, Lewis Hall comes off at half time. My thought when the match was going on was that he was pretty bad. He was not necessarily worse than Tino Livramento. Now, what happened in that game was that Trippier comes on at half time, goes to right back, and Livramento goes to left back, and perhaps there was a bit of an uptick there. But really anybody could have come off at half time in that match. And the fact it was Lewis Hall who... You are totally right. I think if you're talking about, an extended period of time, has been Newcastle's best player, or up there with being Newcastle's best player, sort of extraordinary development if you talk about 18 months or so. There is a lesson there, though, and one that we've already referenced, that you've got to do it. You've got to do it week in, week out. You've got to do it in training. You've got to set the tone. You've got to... you've got to be at it all the time. And then if you lose your place, you've got to win your place back. And so there's a form, football should be a meritocracy, really. And, Lewis Hall will come back into the team and will be exceptional again. I've got no doubt about that. But, it's like it should be the same rule for everybody. We talk about first name on team sheet or that kind of thing. But, it should be people proving themselves week in, week out, right? So the same applies to him as it does to everybody else. That would be my take on that.
Fair play. Right then, just about time to move on, chaps. But I think most importantly, one of the things we need to move on from is Chatfin Hall. Can we draw a line under that now?
But we as a podcast, I think, need to, we just need to stop
draw
saying
a line
that
now.
Do we mean the phrase or do we mean the actual chats?
I think both.
Yeah. Talking about the thing and the stupid phrase as well. That needs to stop now. Can I have your word, both of you, that you're going to move on from this?
I mean, I moved on from it a long time ago, but yeah.
No. I'm all for silliness, but at some point somebody has to be a grown-up. No. All right.
I'll move on for it for 12 months. Hang on, what if they go to Slaley Hall? What would we say?
Don't do this, Slaley, now. Please.
Bamborough Castle. He's just going to go through sort of grand country houses or castles in Northumberland.
Chatborough Castle. No.
Anyway, let's move on.
This is worse than moving
no.
on. Right.
Okay.
The youth team. Let's have a quick chat about the youth team. They've had a bit of success recently. The under-18s round off a season at Borough on Saturday and already assured of the best placing and points per game ratio since 2011-12, the under-14s won the Albert Phelan Cup, coming back from 2-0 down in the final. And the under-14s coach Greg Ryder said, "This competition brings together some of the strongest academies in the country, and to emerge as winners is testament of the hard work that goes in across every department at the academy." Good news, Chris.
Brilliant news, yeah. I mean, Mark Atkinson, who we had on the podcast a few weeks ago, please go back to listen to it. He spoke about the success that has been at various different parts of the youth level. And he mentioned how the under-14s had got to the final, but to have won this, it feels like a big achievement. And as we keep reiterating, this is not about the here and now. Newcastle need to then move these players further up, and they need to then go on to professional careers at Newcastle or elsewhere. This is not the development over. But the fact it shows, A, the talent they have at that age, the raw talent that is there, and Newcastle have been able to nurture to get that success, but also just that sort of winning culture, that winning feeling. You see it at Chelsea and Man City, the amount of youth trophies that they're and youth competitions that their youth players win, and it sort of breeds that culture, and that's what Newcastle want. They want it to be that everyone is striving for this. So great achievement, and to have played at Goodison Park must have been a sort of big. So they've also gone to Everton and won as well. They haven't done it on their own turf. Is a great achievement, and hopefully more to come as well. And then for the under 18s. They have beaten Man United in recent weeks. They've just beaten Leeds United. They look like they're going to finish third in the league, and that is, again, testament to what's there, particularly because for the under-18s, they have been much disrupted across the course of this season because a lot of their players go up to the under-21s. Newcastle, over the last few years, have made a conscious effort to promote as many players as possible to get them playing younger rather than have their under-21s populated by loads of 20 and 21-year-olds. They want those players coming through. So there's quite a lot of upheaval there. Some of the players who played for the under-18s in those matches, like Rory Finneran, have regularly played for the under-21s. But it just shows, again, hopefully the talent that is there and the winning culture which is being bred in that environment.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Right then, lovely stuff. Let's move on to the lasses and quickly check in. They finished the disappointing campaign in disappointing fashion, losing 1-0 to Durham at the Gateshead International Stadium. And guess who got the goal? George Colgan.
Well, I don't need to guess because Chris told us at the start of the show. I mean, yeah, I already know the answer. Yeah, so does everybody else who's listened this far. What a strange question.
That's a good point, yeah.
I mean, it is a quiz question that I could get right because it is anger.
Who was it then?
Anger Keegan Stubbs.
I mean, find out because Ollie messaged us during the second half of Newcastle's men's game against Brighton as well. So at that point, when men were up against it, and then we found out that Amba Keegan Stubbs had scored against Newcastle women, it was sort of, it did feel like both the worlds were caving in for both sides at that point.
Tanya Oxtoby was sent off after taking issue with the officials, and Jordan Nobbs wins fan vote for player of the season. Molly Pike also has announced a surprise retirement as well. Newcastle Lass has not taken any momentum into the summer. Do we think there's more changes afoot, George?
Oh, I think there are definitely changes afoot, yeah. But, you know, you have to sort of take a step back and say that, you know, Newcastle finished sixth this season with 33 points. Last season they finished fifth on 34 points, so there hasn't been progress. I mean, it was seen as a huge season. There's been a lot of turmoil at the club, and, you know, new sporting director, new head of women's football, and of course a new head coach. But if they took that took that decision with the hope that it would, you know, lead to promotion. That hasn't happened. And, you know, I think you could say that consolidating in the division is one thing, and, you know, that needed to happen after Newcastle's successive promotions. But this has to go down as a big, big disappointment. The idea at the start was to go straight back up, two automatic promotion places plus a playoff. And, you know, ultimately they've been way off it. Now, there was a huge amount of change last summer in terms of players, maybe too much looking back. You know, they were certainly ambitious with the people that they brought in, but they're, you know, a lot of kind of experienced and people who knew the club left, including Amber. I think lessons do have to be learnt from this. Now, again, they're not experienced at this level as a club. A lot of their players are now, in fact, at a high level, but it just hasn't worked. So, you know, we know that they're still ambitious. We know they've got big plans. It is disappointing, though, that the season's ended the way it has, and there's a lot of work to do.
There certainly is. Right then, let's move on. Nottingham Forest on the horizon, Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff. They head to the City Ground, face the form team in the division. Forest have 4 wins from the last 5 games, including that 5-0 demolition of Sunderland as well. They're also in the semi-final of the Europa League as well, but perhaps that's not really a bad thing, George.
Well, we'll find out. One of the kind of interesting things is that Newcastle, I think they still sort of look quite tired, mentally fatigued, you know, against Brighton, certainly the second half, you know. So albeit they've had more time on the training pitch, I think there's been a lot of tension hanging over the team, the club. And so that does, you know, that does take effect in the legs. There's also nothing like wins and winning to boost confidence. And, you know, when you're on a good run like Forest are on, as we've seen with Newcastle in the past, you know, you can use that momentum, use that positive adrenaline to kind of get through matches. So it's, you know, I don't know. I think that's sort of mixed blessings, really. But, you know, Brighton were also in very good form before they came to Newcastle, and Newcastle did get a win against them. And, you know, that game could have gone the other way, or it could have gone differently for Newcastle, but it didn't. And so they've had a free week. They've got to make use of it, and hopefully heads will have cleared a bit, and hopefully they'll have more certainty about what they're doing as a team. And, you know, I think it's right to look for... I mean, I've completely reverted to my pre-takeover Newcastle United supporter. I expect Newcastle to lose every game now. If they don't, I'll be happy.
Anything else is a bonus, eh?
Yeah, and everything else is a bonus. But, you know, they've got an opportunity there, and let's look to end the season strongly.
They will, of course, Chris, be without Lewis Miley, who fractured a fibula in training. Do we expect to see him back for pre-season? We think it's going to be a long layoff?
Newcastle's original confirmation of this injury, which was on the same day as it actually occurred, which I think must have shown how sort of serious it was, and maybe something that it had been picked up by somewhere for them to reset. I think it was good for them to release that immediately, but he is due to see a specialist, as I'm like today, on the day we're speaking, Wednesday. But Newcastle seemed hopeful that he would be back for pre-season. We'll probably find out more from Howe on Friday on that. He could really do with that pre-season as well. He's had quite a few injuries up until this stage. He's only just turned 20. This is just after his birthday as well, which was earlier this week. He is, as I say, still growing. He's had quite a lot of time out. He missed part of the early part of last season, which I think affected him. But next season's huge for him and for Newcastle, particularly if, say, Sandro Tonali was to go. Lewis Miley is going to be expected to step up and probably play more in that number six role. He's also shown that he can play at right back, being selected ahead of actual out-and-out right-backs at points this season because he's done so well there. For 2026-27, Lewis Miley looks like he could be a central cog in this Newcastle side. So for both him and for Newcastle, I think it's vital that he does have as much of, if not all, of pre-season available and to be ready for that season.
We were going to come on to talk about Elliot Anderson a little bit, but actually I think it's worth mentioning him now. He leaves Newcastle in circumstances that nobody wanted. It was really painful, but has absolutely come of age, you know, as a regular first team player in that Nottingham Forest team. Now, that was the vision that Newcastle had for him, and I don't want to kind of rewrite history, and you know, we can all do that a bit, but I was talking to someone senior around the first team, and like, he was speaking wistfully. It's like, you know, Elliot, Lewis together in midfield, you know, like, how would that, you know, that was the big idea, how would that be? And it's like, you know, at some point, I said at the start when we did those headlines, that there is a feeling that Lewis Miley is ready. Newcastle's first choice midfield, Tonali, Bruno, Joelinton. I mean, you know, we've talked at various moments, you know, probably more towards the start of this season, that, or even last season, that is arguably one of the best in the Premier League. But Miley is ready. He's ready to play. And we're only going to see what a good player he is or how good a player he can be once he's in the team and stays in the team for an extended period of time. Now that he's filled out, that is the plan for him. That's what people want. I mean, or at right back for that matter. I mean, he's been so good in that position. So it's a real shame that this has happened. But I think we have to be excited. We didn't quite get to see that with Elliot Anderson because he just didn't get that run of games at the time. But with regular football, he's just seeing what a kind of fantastic footballer he's developed into. And I think the time is now for Miley.
There's a chance that Nottingham Forest will also be without Morgan Gibbs-White as well. He picked up a nasty facial injury in that Chelsea win. We'll probably know more by Thursday if he turns out against Villa in the Europa League. But Chris, it would be great if that game could go to extra time, wouldn't it?
It would be from Newcastle's perspective. And I think in many ways it would almost be to Newcastle's benefit if Forest were to get through. You can look at it either way, but I think if Forest were to get through and in that final, then focus would shift to that. Whereas, yeah, you could say they'd be deflated if they didn't get through, but equally then maybe they'd have more incentive to really perform in the Premier League. Gibbs-White, yeah, he's a special player. We'll find out more about that. I mean, Newcastle's record actually is very good at the City Ground, strangely. I think they've won the last four there. So it is. Forest are in huge form, positive form, but Newcastle have actually gone to the City Ground and tend to have played well there. I remember they've had a few fight backs under Howe there as well, where they've fallen behind or the way that they sort of performed. It'll be interesting because in some ways you could argue Newcastle have been slightly better away from home than largely they have been at home in recent weeks and months. So yeah, it should be an interesting contest, but hopefully Forest's attention is elsewhere by then, because you'd have to say that they're nearly safe as well, even despite Spurs winning at the weekend.
We've also been a little bit jammy at times on occasion at the City Ground as well, haven't we? There's sometimes the luck's been on our side. However, chaps, after 35 games of the Premier League season, mathematically, Newcastle United could still be relegated, but they could also still qualify for the Champions League. Is this why it's so difficult to figure out how we feel about things this season, George? Because I just can't decide whether it's been good or bad.
Well, it does sum it up. And like Chris and I had a bit of a kind of laugh about that. You know, it's like the previous week at Arsenal in the press conference, Eddie Howe has asked the question, are you looking over your shoulder? Are you worried about relegation? Newcastle win a match, and he is asked in the press conference, is Europe on your agenda? Now, that is to do with how the league table looks, yeah. You know, of course.
And also how the media works.
But it's also how the media works. And it is also very telling about this season. You're right. It's like, if we just look at the cup games, Newcastle have had a pretty decent season. You know, they defended their Carabao Cup to the semi-final. They got to the round of 16 of the Champions League for the first time. You know, they want to be winning things and obviously haven't managed to do that, but it's not bad. If you only look at the Premier League, it's been a desperately disappointing season. If you put all of those things together, including the struggle that there's been in, you know, assimilating new players and everything else, it's like, okay, not been great, but it's also not been terrible. I think if you talk to people around the team and say this has been a failure, that they would push back on that, and they would reference the cup games and things like that. So yeah, it sums things up in a very sort of telling, interesting way. I mean, it's felt like a very, very long season.
It certainly
I can't
has.
Say that. I don't feel like I've enjoyed a lot of it.
No.
And I think that's a lot to do with the hangover from the summer. And it felt like the whole season has been a hangover in a bit of a way.
Just very briefly, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that, I mean, for a start, I don't think Newcastle are going to get the Champions League. So I can just, you know, almost dismiss that as a point. But even if Newcastle just about sneak into Europe, I think that the way that this season has felt, and the strange thing is, if you take a sort of wider look at it across the Premier League, there'll be a lot of clubs who will respond in the same sort of way and look at their seasons and probably not be particularly happy with where they are. Chelsea, Liverpool, lots of other clubs, even if Liverpool get into the Champions League, it hasn't been a happy season there. It's felt like for a lot there's been stagnation or regression. But I just think Premier League-wise, this has been a very difficult season. Newcastle have lost far too many games, and so therefore, even if they were to sneak into Europe, I just think the number of matches they've lost, it makes it a disappointing Premier League season. I fully take on board, and I do agree that when you take the cups into it, then that changes the equation, but purely Premier League-wise, I just think it's just been disappointing.
I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, they're also not going to get relegated.
No.
I mean, they're not going to qualify the championship. So the premise of the entire question is
it's flawed,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we should have just not bothered. We should have not bothered. But I do think it's kind of interesting. I mean, if they somehow snuck into Europe, it would be job done. I mean, I think that would be the sort of strange way of...
I mean, if they win those last three games, that's, you know, there's a very good chance of them getting there. If they win those last three games, though.
Yeah, and I mean... Obviously, I'm not then saying what's all the fuss been about, because Chris is totally right. They've lost way too many games. Nobody can be happy with that. The team has regressed in a lot of ways. We haven't come out of this season feeling more confident about the future, I don't think. You know, like at the end of last season, Newcastle were in the Champions League. They'd won a trophy, and you would think there was a massive opportunity in front of them. And that opportunity was squandered, and it has been squandered. And I think we're left at the end, towards the end of this season, with more questions than answers, really. But it is a funny way of thinking about it, yeah. And yeah, as three wins, Newcastle in Europe, job done.
It's not going to happen, is it?
It's not going to happen. I can't see it. It's not going to happen.
Right then, chaps, let's finish things off. Please do us a favour and get in touch. Email podonthetyne@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter, X and Blue Sky @podonthetyne. Check out our subscription offering as well at podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm and look at our extra Tyne episodes. Lots of lovely, lovely extra content in there for you. Thanks a lot for your time, chaps. Thanks, Chris Woff. Are we all feeling a little bit better now? It was a little bit spiky at the start. And it was a little bit angst-ridden. Do we all love each other again?
Yes, and I just want to share some love out there as well, because I just wanted to say thank you very, very much to everyone who responded to either the show, as mentioned it, or on social media as well, to my pleas for donations for Tiny Lives. That's ticked beyond £2,500 now. The original target was £500. So thank you so much, everyone. Brilliant. who spared anything at all, and the lovely comments that are in there about the podcast and what we do. So yes, just wanted to say thank you so, so much.
Wonderful.
He kind of glossed over the bit there about loving each other a bit, didn't he?
It was a very political answer, that, wasn't it?
I love the wider podcast listenership.
Yeah. Pod on the Tyne community.
Straight battered that.
I love the Pod on the Tyne community. Thank you.
Thanks for your time, George.
You're very welcome. Yeah, we, you know, creative differences.
We could have split up due to musical similarities. Oh, bless you. Right.
Oh, God.
We need a break, man. We need a break. That's what it is. We're nearly there. Nearly at the end. Thank you very much for listening. Everybody out there from Pod on the Tyne, we hope you have a good week. We'll speak to you on Sunday for the match day episode for that Forest game. Until then, take care. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus T&Cs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.